It's The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Governor Tom Wolf halted evictions and foreclosures across the Commonwealth in May. Now, more than 3 months later, the governor is saying his executive power has reached its limit. Pennsylvania's unemployment rate in July was nearly 14%. During the Great Recession, unemployment peaked at about 9%, according to the State Department of Labor and Industry. On top of landmark unemployment in the state, the federal government is at a standstill on extended unemployment benefits. The president's emergency unemployment benefits are almost half of what families were receiving. So there's less money, high unemployment, and the rent is due. Celeste Scott is housing justice organizer with Pittsburgh United. Celeste, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Celeste, is there an eviction crisis on the horizon in Pittsburgh?
Yes. Yes, we believe there's an eviction crisis around the country. There's an eviction crisis happening. It was already happening before, but we know with the pandemic exacerbating what we already had going on before as a crisis, we believe that there's definitely an eviction crisis on the horizon if we don't all pull together and do something to stop it.
Celeste, how critical was that $600 a week to lower income people in Pittsburgh?
So we know that that $600 a week for folks was a lifeline. Folks are already, you know, before the pandemic, were having issues working for poverty wages and not being able to make the rising rents as it was. So that $600 was definitely helping folks to access the things that they need, you know, food, childcare, all the things that have been heightened during the pandemic. That $600 was helping people to pay the bills.
Celeste, can you tell us the story of a family that you've recently had to assist?
Oh, certainly. I have recently had to assist one of my own family members who came from a career in wealth management at an actual bank. And, you know, during the pandemic, lost employment, had to apply for the pandemic unemployment, was not able to access that unemployment until just before July. And so, you know, she has children. We're finding that most of the people that are impacted the most by this and have been before, but have been exacerbated, are Black, Indigenous people of color, mothers, children in our Commonwealth, not just in the city, but in the county. So just trying to help her to navigate being able to pay the rent and utilities. And, you know, thank goodness for the rent relief program that have come about that we are helping people to navigate. But it's been really difficult for people to access those monies.
So we hear food, we hear health issues, and of course, the, you know, shelter issues. But mentally, what is this doing to people?
I mean, we see, as we've seen before with the housing crisis and how housing is such a foundational element for folks to be able to have to deal with things like mental health. We're seeing an increase in domestic violence. We're seeing a lot of people, because of shelter in place and because of not being able to do the regular routines, that are really suffering with mental health issues and things like that. And with a mass eviction during a pandemic, we know that that will just overwhelm the systems and people will just suffer more on the ground.
The governor's eviction and foreclosure moratorium ends this month. It doesn't look like it can be extended. The rent was not erased. It will still be due. Does that mean renters will be left with huge debts and could face eviction?
Yes, it does. You know, we have been trying to keep communication lines open with the governor's office. And so we feel like this is arguably one of the most important choices of Governor Wolf's administration. And we were pushing for him to find ways to extend the moratorium and to give the Pennsylvania Housing Finance Agency time to work with us to improve these rent relief programs so that tenants can get the assistance they need to stay in their homes. Because we know if folks are not in their homes, if they're unhoused, they're not able to do things like washing their hands and, you know, making sure that the spread of the virus does not continue.
The governor issued a release a couple days ago and sent a letter to the legislature saying he cannot legally extend the moratorium again, and it's up to the legislature to do something. But are there enough financial resources and assistance to help people if a moratorium cannot be extended?
So we think that the money has been allocated, and I know they're asking for more money, but the barrier that we are finding and that we are seeing is that the money is not getting into folks' hands. So we're seeing that, you know, folks need this money. There are thousands of applications being put in, and, you know, we've been walking people through the process. Another strategy that we're also looking to do is advocating for the Allegheny Court of Common Pleas to extend the countywide moratorium at least until November 30th, because we know we need time for these programs to work. We need time for the monies to get into the tenants' hands. And what that also means is that the money will get into the landlord's hands.
Are you working with landlords to cooperate with tenants?
Yes. So the housing justice table that I run every 2 weeks, and we've been immersed in this, and we have Action Housing, who is one of the largest landlords in the region. And so, yes, we do have sympathetic landlords. We have landlords with shared values and, you know, people that we understand, you know, need to get their money to keep people housed. But we also know that the largest impact will be on tenants, and that's intersectionally. Queer folks, disabled folks, veterans and seniors. We're seeing just so many folks that are just needing help and being overwhelmed by this pandemic. So we know that adding eviction on top of that, for me, is just unconscionable.
You've mentioned courts. You've mentioned the government. What can housing stable people do to support those who are struggling?
Oh, certainly. So we have, we've been working really hard with Ann Wright, who is amazing, from Carnegie Mellon University Create Lab, who's actually made, it's an app, it's a website. It's called renthelppgh.org, where folks can actually, you can refer your neighbors. You can, you know, anyone that you think may need help, you can, you know, put their contact information in there, and that resource is available. And we have been having so many people that have been coming through that resource. And so, you know, if you are housing stable, I think the best thing you can do is help us get the word out. You know, keep an eye on your neighbors. We found so many people, you know, throughout the years before this pandemic that may not have been so-called impacted by the housing crisis, but they have just cared so much about their neighbors and cared so much about their communities that they have, you know, become some of the fiercest advocates along with us.
Eviction isn't just a one-time thing. How can this follow people for the rest of their lives?
Oh, certainly. So as someone with lived experience, eviction is like, I mean, it's like the scarlet E for folks when you're trying to access housing. It follows you, even if you have, you know, been a good tenant, if you've, you know, tried to access housing in the ways that, you know, you need to, it's not a restorative process. Having evictions on your record, it makes it almost impossible to access housing. And if you are, like I said, a Black, Indigenous person of color, or someone that is marginalized in these different groups, seniors, veterans, disabled folks, it just makes it impossible. I can say for myself and for probably 99.9% of the people that I work with, that having that eviction on your record, it's just something that you can't get past. It's just not an indicator of, you know, who you are as a person.
Celeste Scott is housing justice organizer with Pittsburgh United. Celeste, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you for having me.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Internet access, who has it, who doesn't? It's not a new issue. We've heard politicians make calls for funding and infrastructure to expand internet access. Then the pandemic happened. Libraries and career centers closed and families lost access to the internet. Dana Brown is the executive director of Pittsburgh Hires Veterans. Dana, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Dana, overall, what's the unemployment picture for Pittsburgh area veterans?
Pennsylvania has the fourth largest veteran population in the United States. Allegheny County has the highest number of veterans in the state, more so than even Philadelphia County. The veteran unemployment rate traditionally in Allegheny County lags anywhere from 1.5% to 2% behind the state and national veteran unemployment rates. So this is already a particular concern. Mm-hmm. Looking through July 2020, the unemployment rate in Allegheny County is 12.4%. So we add 1.5% to 2% on top of that, and you can see that the veterans are definitely struggling more so than that of the general population.
Right. How has the pandemic affected how your organization helps veterans find jobs?
So pre-COVID, we were able to conduct in-person interviews and sessions to help veterans prepare and find jobs. Unfortunately, post pandemic, we've had to limit the number of in-person interactions that we've had. Having an in-person interaction is definitely much better than over the phone or Zoom. Many veterans prefer that unique and tailored service, which is one of the things that we do very, very well, and that's what we're known for. So now we are forced to do more Zoom meetings and over the phone, which is definitely not as effective, but we are still able to provide really good and tailored, unique services to the population that we serve.
When we think about internet access, rural areas are often the focus, but in Pittsburgh, that's not necessarily the case. How so?
Many of our constituents going into the COVID didn't have access to technology. They were doing things on their smartphone, and then they were going to the library and to PA CareerLink, maybe to a trusted friend or a family member. Now, all of these things are less accessible. And so, even things such as applying for a job, making modifications to a resume, filling out background information, doing assessments. We had a veteran come into our office the other day just to do an assessment. These are just the small things that you don't think about when you are applying for jobs. But for those job seekers, it becomes a really harsh reality when an hour or two process can now take days sometimes because certain parts of the application process can't be completed on a smartphone.
There are plenty of us who are not internet savvy or maybe just a little uncertain. So, what can you do right now, and what do you hope to do to provide that in-person advice to help navigate the system successfully?
So we are fortunate enough to be in the initial stages of a partnership with AARP, which surprisingly, a large number of our constituents are over the age of 50. Many of these people are technologically less familiar, less experienced, and don't have access to the technology. And we are trying to meet people where they are if we have to meet them in a mutually convenient, beneficial, in-person space so that we can walk them side by side, or if they can get to our office, we will do all these things in person to make sure that no one is left behind in the job search process.
Finally, Dana, how has this pandemic changed how your organization is going to do its work moving forward? Will there be more of a focus on technology?
Yes. Absolutely. And more of a focus on preparing people to perform well in a virtual process. I mean, there's a whole litany of things that because people can't meet in person, they are now forced to do virtually. And we all need to get up to speed on that.
Dana Brown is the Executive Director of Pittsburgh Hires Veterans. Thanks, Dana.
Thank you.
It's the Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. The pandemic has devastated small businesses across the country, but Black-owned businesses have closed at a higher rate than others and have also been less likely to get relief aid. Keystone Crossroads' Miles Bryan has this profile of Black businesses fighting to stay afloat.
When Jimmy Mills and his brother Jason were growing up, they didn't eat a lot of bacon and eggs. Instead, their Korean mom cooked the cuisine from her country and that of Jamaica, where their dad is from.
As I grew older, my mom started to kind of fuse things, and that kind of became her little experiments in the kitchen, and we were like her test dummies for it. It actually turned out pretty well.
So well, in fact, that bringing those dishes to more people than can fit around mom's kitchen table became the brothers' dream. In 2016, they pulled it off, opening the Jamaican-Korean fusion restaurant, The Spicy Belly, in Philly's Manayunk neighborhood. The restaurant quickly grew popular with locals and tourists, eventually employing about 20 people.
It was always a dream of ours to to be in business together as brothers, to have a Black-owned business and to do it right, and to bring those two cultures together and to realize that, you know, we're people before anything.
Then the pandemic hit. The Spicy Belly went from doing many thousands of dollars of business a week to just a few hundred bucks. Mill says they applied for grants and loans, but didn't get nearly as much as they asked for. So earlier this month, the Spicy Belly served its last meal. Mills moved out of the neighborhood. Staying was just too painful.
You know, because everybody knows me as chef around town. So going to the local eateries and the bars and the parks, even with my daughter, I didn't want to be constantly reminded of the Spicy Belly.
What happened to the Spicy Belly is happening to a lot of Black-owned businesses in Philly. A new analysis of census data performed exclusively for Keystone Crossroads suggests Black-owned businesses in Philly are closing at a rate 1.5 times higher than white-owned ones.
That comparison is jarring, but I'm not surprised at all.
Tiffany Gilbert is with the African American Chamber of Commerce of Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware. She says that Black business owners generally have less access to capital and smaller savings to stay afloat during a crisis. And in the last few months, Black and other minority business owners have been less likely to get grants or loans provided by pandemic relief programs. Part of that is because Black business owners are often shut out of mainstream financial institutions that have been gatekeepers to that money. Another part, Gilbert says, is that for many Black business owners, systemic racism has bred a deep mistrust of offers of aid.
There's just a legacy of skepticism.
How you doing?
Oh, a little tired, but I'm blessed.
Gwendolyn Hosey, known to everyone as Miss G, has usually tried to avoid taking on any debt to finance her West Philly boutique, Strutton Lightly. But right now, she's applying for all the help she can get. Business is way down. The shop is a snapshot of the pre-pandemic era, filled with prom accessories and graduation gifts. And water damage on the ceiling will require thousands of dollars to fix.
What's that noise?
My alarm system that I can't afford to pay, that they're cutting it off. I can't afford to pay it.
Hosey avoided the looting that decimated many other businesses in her neighborhood in early June, only because her daughter sat outside the boutique from midnight to 6 a.m. each night to protect it. The stress of the pandemic is all the worse because Hosey's going through it alone. Her romantic partner of 10 years died of COVID-19 in late April.
A loving, smart, well-educated, gentle giant is so devastating.
If Hosey wanted to, she could cut her losses now, close Strutton Lightly, and be done with it. But she won't. She can't. Staying open, she says, is about more than just her.
I gotta keep standing. There's no other Blacks that came from this community that has a business. I gotta stand for them. I gotta stand for me. I gotta stand for my great-granddaughters. I gotta keep standing. Nobody else is here standing.
For Keystone Crossroads, I'm Miles Bryan.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. You can find more from this and past episodes of The Confluence online at wesa.fm/confluence and through your favorite podcast app. Thanks to our team, Helen Wigger, Tom Hurley, Julia Zenkovich, and Mary Lee Williams. I'm Kevin Gavin. Until next time, hope you have a good day of good news.